Welcome to Climb Your Mountain, the only podcast that teaches you how to use coaching, neuroscience, and mindfulness to overcome life's challenges. I'm Sarah Maurer, a certified life and performance coach, breathwork facilitator, and trance geek. Each week, I show you how to change your brain fast, for good, and without struggle. Whether you're training to climb an actual mountain, building a business, dating, or planning a fucking rebellion, these tools will help. Listen and learn so you can enjoy more of what you want. Happiness, fun, connection, creativity, courage, and the occasional mountaintop moment. Ready? Let's do this. Hello, my friends. How you doing today? I am all right. I am back home after a vacation that had some hiccups, which I will share a little bit more about on the episode today. Basically, I went down to New Mexico with a really good friend. We were going down to see the annular eclipse and do some backpacking. Neither of us had ever backpacked in New Mexico, and we were going to spend the first 4 days backpacking and actually watch the eclipse from the National Forest from our campsite. And what the first thing that kind of went wrong was we had to stop backpacking after 2 days because there wasn't enough water. And we didn't even think to check for that. We're both from Colorado. We both backpack here. And one thing we realized is we are so lucky in Colorado that there's just like water everywhere. Like you cannot like walk a mile without like having to cross a creek that's got like beautiful, delicious water flowing. And kind of our options for water in New Mexico, if we had known about it, we could have cached ahead of time. But yeah, the water sources that we were finding were a spring that kind of had barely any water in it that was just like a couple puddles in the forest floor, or this really gross, they called it the tank, the rock tank, where the cattle come in, drink water, and it's just this giant muddy hole full with like cow shit all around it, and the water inside is like green, and it smells bad, and you're like, oh my gosh, should we drink that even after we filter it and hit it with the UV pen? My friend actually did do that, and as far as I know, he's still alive, so amazing. And so then we met someone like hiking the other way. We were on the CDT, the Continental Divide Trail, and we're like, hey, what's the water sources like up ahead? And he's like, well, the next one, it's in a few miles, and it's like kind of a cistern that should be running, but it's not, and it's just got a lot of like some water at the bottom that's got algae in it. So we kind of decided to bail on our backpack because we were both like so short on water. We also had a dog with us that needed a lot of water, so yeah, carrying enough water over long distances for like two people and the dog was just getting like really hard and prohibitive. And we didn't like the water that we were finding. So we bailed on the backpack and we switched to a plan where we were going to be car camping and day hiking, which I think was a pretty good plan. I wasn't mad at that at all. But for a number of reasons I won't get into, I'm trying to think about how to talk about this and make it kind of about my feelings. And yeah, like I'm just going to get into it and say it. For a number of reasons that I won't like really speculate about or analyze, my friend really wanted to wild camp the entire time. And the place where we were wild camping was at 9,000 feet. It's October, so it is like freezing cold conditions up there. And we were kind of in this grim campsite on a very high plateau in the National Forest. And I was like, I just don't want to stay up here the whole time. I really want a hotel room, or, you know, I'd be okay with like, you know, going to a campground that has a bathroom, that has a shower, you know, like a lot of people might be surprised by this. And I think I maybe like intentionally kind of give off this vibe, but yeah, I am not like the world's toughest person with camping. I will camp in the winter. I will camp in tough conditions, but I won't do it just to do it. I have to be doing it so that I can climb a mountain or go on a really cool backpacking loop and finish the loop, which was the original plan. I don't do it just for shits and giggles at all. Like, so I was not loving this. So we kind of went through a couple days of this. It's extremely cold. My friends didn't want to make a fire. And then, like, it was so cold that, like, during the day, you pretty much had to be in your sleeping bag in the tent most of the time, unless we were hiking. We were on a wild site, so there's no place to sit and eat or work or journal except on, like, random rocks. And, yeah, the bathroom thing was really hard for me. I think it's harder on girls than it is on guys. Like, I was just dying for like a bathroom, especially in, like in the night, that I could just get up and pee and not like have to hang off the side of a tree so I didn't like pee on my feet, which us girls know is, it's kind of hard for us. So all this was going on, and I won't get like into the reasons why or why not or any judgments about it, but the thing that made me really sad and really upset is that I felt like my needs weren't really being taken seriously or respected. And I was pretty direct about this. I shared that I didn't want a wild camp anymore, and that at the very least, I wanted to go to a campground. And I kind of got told all the reasons we could not do that, and yeah, we did a lot of talking about things that stressed the other person out, but not much talking about the fact that I'm recovering from a chronic illness and really need to get plenty of sleep and minimize stress. And my friend was driving, so I didn't feel like I had the option to like leave and do my own thing. So I kind of ended up just feeling kind of helpless and voiceless, but also kind of being in this position where I didn't want to cause a scene because I do care about this person. This person is like family to me. And I think, like, deep down, I worried that they would not love me if I made too much of a fuss. And then at the same time, I had this horrible feeling that I was letting myself down by continuing to kind of go along with what in my mind was this foolishness. And I think that, so this episode is all about people pleasing, and this brings us to one of the number one misbeliefs I really want to talk to you about. And it's a misbelief I think that happens kind of commonly early in personal development. And it's the idea that all people pleasing is bad and that we should not try to please other people. So I was really kind of struggling with these two extremes, like wanting to like speak my mind and really kind of force the issue, and then feeling bad that I didn't. And then feeling if I did, like I would just not be loved anymore. It might ruin this friendship that is important to me. So I don't know. So one of the ways that I was kind of coping as I was like passing the time in the cold was listening to podcasts. And I was so lucky. The universe offered to me two awesome ones right at that moment. They were already downloaded in my queue on my podcast app when I arrived. And I listened to them and learned a lot. And they were both about people pleasing. So I thought for this episode, what I'm going to do is kind of share my learnings from both these amazing teachers, both these amazing podcasts. And then I'll also share some of my own learnings and insights and growth that I kind of noticed on this trip that might be helpful for you too. So let's start with the two podcasts. So the first podcast I'm going to talk a little bit about, it's an episode of the Mastering Coaching Skills podcast, which is hosted by Lindsay Dotsloff. She's one of my teachers. She's really awesome. If you're a coach that wants to deepen your skills, really recommend her. And she was actually interviewing another coach named Sarah Fisk on this podcast, who actually is a coach that works mostly with people pleasing, clients who want to stop people pleasing. And the episode is called Are You People Pleasing Your Clients? So it's kind of geared toward coaches, but they actually did a lot of really heartfelt and interesting sharing about both of their journeys with people pleasing, kind of some thoughts about people pleasing that really kind of kept them from speaking up for a long time. So I think especially, even if you're not a coach, the first half of that episode might be worth listening to if you're a people pleaser. And I will definitely like drop a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. So a couple highlights, a couple things I wrote down since I had some time up there on the freezing plateau listening to the podcast that really, really landed for me that they talked about. And the first one is that children, especially girls, are praised for being kind and sweet and good and easy and well-behaved. And in other words, for not really having needs or wants that are inconvenient or threatening to others. So I heard that and it was like, oh my God, like welcome to my reality. And I mean, just a little background on me and my family growing up. I was always And they actually said this in the podcast. They're like, parents say this thing to kids that's a little bit manipulative when they're like, you were such an easy baby or such an easy kid. That kind of translates as you didn't trouble us by expressing your needs or individuating. And that's pretty common, actually, for only children. They didn't say this in the podcast. This is something that I've kind of noticed as an only child and having lots of friends that are first children and having clients that are onlys and firsts. That people-pleasing role is kind of like one that's up for grabs in the family that the only child or the first child will often grab. And then by the time the second child and the third child come along, like someone else is already being the people-pleaser, so they might take on a different role. But yeah, definitely in my family, that's been the case. I'm the one that's like very pleasing and easy and doesn't have any needs and is kind of taking care of my parents' needs and... it really was that way for most of my life. And I think like even into my 20s and my 30s, I really kind of played this role. And what kind of snapped me out of it, this is really interesting. My parents got a divorce like late in their, after being married for several decades, they got a divorce around 2010, but they continued like living unhappily together. So I think around the time they got divorced, I was 35. They were like in their early 60s and they're still living in the same house. And I was living in Asia, but and then I think for a little bit in Colorado. But anytime I would like want to go home and visit them, I kind of have the two of them like living unhappily together, kind of like griping about each other, kind of watching who I'm paying more attention to. And it was just like a miserable couple of family years. And the good thing about it, like everything's for the medicine, right? Everything is happening for you. It was the thing that kind of finally pushed me to kind of like stand up for my own needs and like push back at them after like kind of trying to keep them happy for my entire life. And especially with my mom, she really wanted me to take her side against my dad. And when I didn't, she would say things like, I don't know what happened to you. You were such a loving child. You were such an easy child. Now I feel like we're not close. And yeah, there it is. Like kind of the manipulation and the resentment of, yeah, like me having any needs that are not like her needs or like inconvenience or like requires some work to deal with. So yeah, and that kind of like seeing that actually like helped me kind of finally like make the break and realize like it is time for me in my family, and then probably in my larger life, my other relationships, to really just start having needs and expressing them, and that's okay. I don't have to do this thing anymore where I just like pretend to be easy and sunny and happy all the time. So I really like credit that period of life as being the beginning of that. But anyway, so that's about my life. So back to the podcast, things Sarah and Lindsay were sharing. They were talking about, and they both talked about this, that when they both started to kind of work on people-pleasing as part of their personal development journey, they worried that if they have needs, they will lose love from others. And I was like, yes, that is what I'm experiencing right now. I really want off this fucking freezing plateau. And I really feel like if I just put my foot down and be like, we're leaving, that'll be like the end of my friendship. And I don't want that either. I don't want, I want to continue to be loved. Would it really be the end of the friendship? I honestly, that might be a story that I have in my head, but it's probably something that's kind of worth exploring. And then I think this is really key. They talked about how people pleasing is not inherently bad, as a lot of us kind of, I don't know, what's the word? It's a mistake that a lot of people make early in their personal development journey, that we can never be people pleasing and never acquiesce and never give in and never put other people first because that's unhealthy. It's untrue. People pleasing is part of healthy relationships. Give and take is part of healthy relationships. And it's really important that we, you know, keep that in mind. And so they actually offered some guidance around that. Like, when do you kind of put other people first? When do you kind of make a boundary and put yourself first? And they were talking about, I think Sarah was talking about good questions to ask. When you feel the urge to please someone, ask yourself why. like, why? Why do I want to do this? In this case, it was like, because I'm afraid. I won't, if I ask for what I really need, I won't be loved. So I'm just going to stop asking and be really quiet. And then the second question Sarah Fisk wants you to ask is, do you like these reasons? And I'm like, no. I kind of feel like I want to ask, even if the answer is no, I don't want to like participate in my own, what's the word, in like making my own needs invisible. I don't want to like make it too comfortable for others to ignore my needs. I really want to express them. So that was really helpful. Yeah, and then the last thing they talked about, I thought this was really powerful too. It's kind of like, I call this, they didn't use these words, but this is something I talk about with my clients, and I call it choosing your suck. And here's how choosing your suck applies to people pleasing. Here's the thing, asking for what you need is uncomfortable, but so is people pleasing and like putting other people's needs in front of yours. Asserting your needs feels wicked uncomfortable. And it's also kind of, we tend not to, because that's kind of the unknown. Whenever we kind of suck it up and keep our needs to ourselves, that feels more familiar. That feels safer. It's maybe doing damage to us. It's maybe not like serving us. It's maybe kind of perpetuating stories that we have in our head that maybe aren't even true. Like I said, I don't know that if I had really like stood up for myself and been like, we're out of here. if that would have, I mean, there might have been some grumbling, I'm sure, and some discomfort, but yeah, I don't know that it would have ended a friendship that's like a 10-year friendship. So yeah, so it's kind of like is choose your suck. And it like as you start to kind of expand your capacity to be uncomfortable in new ways, you're really going to expand your capacity to ask for what you need, to be more assertive, to be more direct, to stop basically like, I hate the word lying, but it kind of is. I think it's Brooke Castillo that says people pleasers are liars. And I always laugh when she says it because I'm kind of like, yep. But yeah, being like really honest with the people around you. And they talked to you about, I thought this was really interesting, about how we assume that whenever we are telling people what they want to hear, that feels safer and better for them. When sometimes that's not actually true. Sometimes it's very comforting for people around us to know exactly where they stand, know exactly what we're thinking, because we're being honest, we're being direct, we're saying what we mean. And that sometimes that can be really good for relationships. A lot of times when you start behaving that way, if you have not in the past, there's a rocky period. But overall, it over the long run, can often be like a really helpful thing for your relationships. So I thought that was interesting, the choosing your suck, and also just creating safety by always letting people kind of know where you stand can be a positive thing. Kind of letting go of the story that telling people what they want to hear is always the best for the relationship. So yeah, that was that podcast. That was really good. And then the second podcast I listened to, this was so good. It's by a life coach named Brig Johnson. Her podcast is called Breakthrough with Brig. It's a podcast for high achieving Black women, but it's one of my favorite, I'm not Black, but it's one of my favorite podcasts. And she's a life coach that just has so many just amazing things to share. And I've actually been in some of Brig's workshops and seen her coach, and she is just fire. Amazing, amazing coach. So if you want to check this episode out, it's called Breaking the Stigma of Neediness. Again, I will put a link in the show notes. And I thought this podcast had two really awesome aspects. Like it had two parts that really kind of stood out to me. And the first one was kind of a social justice perspective on neediness. And this was speaking more to Black women, but I really appreciated this as someone who's always trying to be a better ally, who's just always trying to understand different points of view. And some of my words here as I describe it might be mine and not Briggs, but basically, she talked about, for the first part of this podcast, how our inherently racist society sees Black women as needless, and Black women have internalized this, and they kind of expect it now of themselves and others. They expect other people and themselves to kind of suck it up, be tough, go it alone, not really have emotional needs. And Brig said, in the episode, I used to be so annoyed when a woman acted like a damsel in distress. And I used to be so upset when I noticed myself like having emotional needs and like wanting to express them. So she talks a little bit how like this is really necessary to perpetuate oppression, to perpetuate slavery. In order for these things to exist, we have to believe that Black people, Black women don't have as many needs as a society. People believe that. Why do we believe that? It probably goes all the way back to slavery. It's okay to... The thinking at the time, I'm not saying that this is okay. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I start to say? But the thinking at the time was, oh, well, it's the like okay to work these people like incredibly hard, like 16 hours a day, like harder than like the person who's the enslaver would ever work, because Black people didn't feel pain. They don't feel tiredness. They're more quote unquote, like physically hardy was kind of the excuse. And for Black women, enslaved people specifically, it's okay to take their children away was the belief, because they don't really have the same emotions, the same emotional needs. And this went all the way to like medical exploitation and experimentation. Brig was sharing a little bit about some of the how like Black women specifically were experimented on, giving surgeries without anesthesia. And this was justified because there was a, kind of a belief that Black people, Black women feel less pain. And it's interesting, I work in healthcare, and I know that like there's a lot of research that shows that a lot of even doctors training today hold some of these beliefs, and even if they don't like consciously hold it, there's unconscious bias that, you know, Black people don't need, for example, when they're in the emergency room, as much pain medication or as much, or they, you know, they can't be like, they're not taken as seriously when they complain about pain or distress. And if you want to read about this, I really encourage you to kind of dive into the story of Susan Moore. She was a doctor. She was a geriatrician. I think this was in Indiana at a hospital, and she was actually hospitalized because she had COVID. And being a physician, she knew like she was quite ill. Like she had a lot of symptoms that were really scary. She had a lot of pain. She was having trouble breathing. And she was, I can't remember if she's in the emergency room or actually already, she might've been already hospitalized. But yeah, she kept trying to get the doctor's attention and being like, hey, I need pain medication. I think there's something really wrong. And being a geriatrician, being a physician, she could be like, I think you need to check this. I think you need to check that. I think this might be wrong. And really, the doctors pretty much that were taking care of her shot her down. They were like, we're actually thinking about sending you home. You seem fine. We've already given you this pain medication. You don't need any more. And they kept kind of, so she finally like got out her phone because she couldn't get anyone to listen and was doing like a Facebook Live, just like talking about like her interaction with these doctors, how they weren't taking her seriously, how she felt like racism was involved, which it really sounds like it was. And the horrible thing, the tragic thing is she actually died. She apparently was like having something really terrible happening that she sensed. She couldn't get anyone's attention and then eventually passed away from complications from COVID. So I'll actually put a link about her in the show notes too, so you can kind of dive into this a little. But anyway, all of this to say, Brig kind of brought it back to you. This made it really hard for her to meet her emotional needs as a black woman, to ask for support, to even acknowledge that it was okay to have any needs. She kind of was always like the strong person that felt like she had to go it alone. And then, this is so sweet, actually. The second thing she talked about that I thought was just so adorable was the story of how it all changed for her. And the thing that kind of taught her the importance of taking care of her emotional needs was having a daughter. It was her youngest daughter of a few kids who was, quote unquote, according to the rest of the world, kind of needy. Like she, this little girl, from the time she was really little, always had a strong need to be near her mom and dad. They couldn't, like, she had older siblings that were old enough to babysit her, but they could never leave her home alone with the siblings. She would just always cry and want to be with them. Brig was talking about how they used to actually have to sneak out of the house to go to the grocery store. They would sneak out when the littlest baby was having a nap, and they would actually let the car roll down the driveway. The driveway was on a slant, so they would let it roll in neutral and not start the engine until it was kind of far away, because they knew if they woke her up, if she heard them driving away, even though she was safe with her older siblings watching her, she would just like run out like yelling for them to take her. And Brig talked about how, you know, like some of the world thought this kid was kind of needy, but we really kind of agreed that we were not going to shame her. We were just like, this is kind of what this child needs. Every child is different. This particular child just needs a little bit more like connection with us for some reason. So they kind of, to a large degree, like accommodated that. Brig talks about like when her daughter was still pretty little, she was starting to jog again, and the only way she could actually like go jogging, because to jog she would have to leave the little girl alone, is she would sit the little girl, her daughter, on the porch, and then she would run around the block and like start like and like wave to the little girl every time she went by and like call to her as she was coming around the corner. And she really like kind of made it so that the little girl always felt like she was there, she was safe, her mom was always gonna, you're just going around the block and always going to come back. So they really, and so they kind of really tried really hard just to kind of meet her where she was. And they're like, yeah, that's how she is, and create safety for her and give her what she needed without shaming her. And this continued to be a kid who would, more than most kids, like kind of cling to their parents a little. Even after she was a teenager, her mom said she would, if there was like a bad storm, she would come in and want to sleep in her bed. And then even when she went away to college, she still like would come home often and like want to just, you know, spend time with her mom, really like quality time together. And yeah, just like sleep over at her mom's house a lot. And yeah, the parents really could have seen this as a problem, and to their credit, they didn't. And interestingly, she said, because we kind of like just kind of let it be okay, the daughter never really had any shame around it. She was just kind of like, hey, this is what I need, and I'm going to ask for it, and I'm going to advocate for myself until I get it. So what happened to this kid? She grew into this very emotionally healthy young woman. She was very high achieving. She was a Division I athlete. She played basketball. She was the team captain in basketball. She was always just really deft at negotiating between the players and the coaches and getting things done. And then she was a good student. So she was able to accomplish a lot because she knew how to kind of fill her tank, Brig said. And she wasn't afraid to ask for support and ask for nurturing and ask for whatever she needed. And now she's an adult. She's graduated from college. She's in a relationship. And Brig said she has no problem asking her partner for support. And yes, she still will call me up on like a Friday and come over and want to like sleep over at my house. So Brig talked a little bit about that. And she's like, it really taught me as like an adult with watching this young woman kind of like move through her life without having a lot of shame around her emotional needs. It kind of taught me the importance of just cultivating relationships where you can really give and take that kind of support. So such a sweet podcast episode. I really recommend listening to it. Like both parts of that were very different, but I just thought so amazing. So I thought also I would share a little bit just about like what I learned about myself and realized about myself and some areas where I saw growth in myself as someone who was kind of raised to be like the easy baby and kind of had that role in the family, kind of being kind of needless and wantless. Yeah, this is what I learned from this trip. So, number one, I learned that I'm not bad or wrong for not throwing a fit or forcing the issue or standing up for myself. Like, this was kind of a theme growing up too. Like my mom was always like, well, whenever someone is mean to you, you basically have to punish them. Like not by being direct or asking for what you want, but like shaming and blaming and manipulating them. And I always have kind of had a like, yeah, because I hated having that done to me as a kid, I have been very loath to do it for other people, but I've always felt like it made me wrong. Like there was something wrong with me because I wouldn't like stand up for myself or like punish other people when they weren't giving me what I wanted or paying attention to me. And maybe it sounds strange. Maybe if you had like a healthier upbringing with this kind of stuff, you're like, what the hell? That's so fucked up, which it kind of is. But like, I think this was like one of the first times I really just accepted that it's okay not to force the issue, that I can look at the situation, I can make decisions, I can decide when to be assertive, I can decide when to step back, and it doesn't make me a wimp. So I kind of knew, even though I really wanted to stay at the campground and felt like I had good reasons, I felt like I was not going to be able to get my friend to stay at the campground. I knew that he had a lot of reasons for not wanting to do that, and without getting into what they are. And I probably wasn't going to be able to like get past them. And that's okay. Like I could either die on that hill or kind of accept that that is the way it is. And then I also like was able to see that he was being, even though he wouldn't go to the campground and get off the freezing cold plateau, he's also like supportive of me in other ways. And this particular friend, I feel like, is kind of family to me. I don't have a lot of family. Like, I'm away from my family out here in Colorado. I'm from Ohio. No one else from my family is here except my mom. And yeah, so he is the one who kind of does very, like, family-like things for me. Like, if we're not on vacation together, like, watching my cat when I'm on vacation, driving me to the airport. He took me to the emergency room one time, bringing me my keys when I'm locked out. And I appreciate that and don't want to jeopardize that by, like, dying, forcing this issue so hard, making him wrong, making him feel bad, and like dying on this hill, basically. I decided, you know, this is not the hill I want to die on. And that doesn't make me a wimp. That doesn't make me wrong. I'm just like, you know, looking at my reasons why I'm not going to stand up for myself in this case. And I do like those reasons. I did kind of come to like a good place with it. So yeah, I thought that was real growth. And then because I'm managing my mind better these days, I was also able to view this situation from a way less emotional place. Some people ask, like, why do breath work and meditation daily? Like, why do you do it like almost every day for years? And my answer is because it kind of cultivates for you a new emotional home. Like a new, you kind of, instead of like living in the emotions of being reactive and defensive and, you know, scarcity and not enoughness, now I really like live in a place that's just a lot more calm. I feel more peaceful. I feel less reactive. And I'm just like in a kind of a safer place in my own mind. And because of that, because I've really cultivated that through years and years and years of mindfulness, not that it needs to take years and years, but years and years, it just gets better and better, I promise you. I can really see that this person, I can see things maybe more from his point of view, rather than just like being like very hurt and very upset and feeling like I'm not being listened to and I'm being the victim. I really can just kind of step back and see things a little more objectively. For example, I can see that this person is someone who's maybe a little out of touch with their own needs for physical comfort, fun, connection, even things like eating good food on a proper schedule. So I can't magically expect if he doesn't do it for himself that he's going to do it for me when he's so out of touch with his own needs. And I can also see where he's trying in his own way to accommodate me. Like he's letting me pick the hikes we do. He did agree to go to town for dinner one night. So I can really see and appreciate the places where he is like trying to throw me a bone a bit. And that definitely kind of helped a lot. And another lesson, another piece of growth. I was really proud of myself. I didn't triangulate. I didn't try to create drama. I didn't start shit or try to get validation from others. So what does this mean? Like, the old me would have been texting our mutual friends and being like, oh my gosh, you won't believe this, because the old me kind of liked the validation of having people on my side, since I wasn't very good at validating myself. So I did text a friend for support. Thank you, Jean. Poor Jean. It was kind of hilarious and ridiculous. I was like, she kind of got me on like day five when I was like really like pent up. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is happening and this is happening. And she's like trying to understand it all as these texts are like flying at her. It was kind of a complex situation. Bless her heart. She was like so sweet. So Jean, thank you. So I did talk to my friend Jean, who was kind of outside the situation. She doesn't like know. She knows me, but not my friend. But at the same time, I was kind of texting with our mutual friend about something unrelated, and I didn't say a word about what was happening, which in the past, I think I would have. I would have been like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? Which isn't necessarily really nice or the kind of person I want to be. And I'm so happy that now I seem to be that person that I want to be. Like, I don't need to start shit or get validation or spread drama or, yeah, in order to feel better whenever there's a conflict or a situation happening. And another piece of growth I noticed, I did manage to mostly hold the thought that we're in this together, and was able to, even when I was feeling like kind of on edge, was able to negotiate, kind of talk things out, problem solve, meet in the middle. And this is not the way my family operated growing up. In my family, I think I mentioned this before, when someone's not meeting your needs, it's really important that you shame, blame, cry, whine, manipulate, and just like make them feel really bad, like basically punish them. So this was, especially by my mom, done to me and my dad. And I think to some degree, maybe done a little bit by my dad too, although maybe in less obvious ways. And I actually remember, it was so funny, because I remember doing this to a friend on another backpacking trip when I was in college and we were on the backpacking trip, and I felt like the other two people that were with me weren't like listening to me or paying attention to me. And I just like started like crying and yelling at them and being like, you guys suck. I hate you. You're so mean. You don't listen. I remember this and feel like so much. I'm like, oh my gosh, bless that child. But also like, oh my gosh, it's a little cringy to remember, right? And Rachel Berngart, DeZubia, and Brian McFarland, if by any chance you're listening to this, I still remember that. And I apologize belatedly. Like, you guys did not, you're probably like, what the hell? We do not deserve this, which was true. But yeah. So on this trip, it was like so different, and I could see so much growth, like in the past, like 20 years since that happened, but also especially in the last few years, I was able to just be like, hey, here's what I absolutely need. How do we make this work for both of us? And I didn't always get what I needed, but I kept trying. I didn't like get pouty and back out. I kept like trying to stay engaged. I didn't make the other person wrong. I really tried to keep seeing it from their point of view, which I think is just tremendous growth. Like, I was kind of amazed at myself. Then the last day, I kind of lost my mind, and that's a different story. But yeah, there was something that happened on the last day we won't get into. That was a little bit, yeah, just like tough. But anyway, it's okay. So for the most of the trip, though, was able to kind of hold that attitude and keep engaged and keep working with the other person as best I could, which I think is a good way to approach it. And then another thing I noticed myself doing, which I don't think I would have done, like even me a couple years ago would have been just like, well, this person wants to do it this way and I don't want to rock the boats and I just want to like make their life easy because that's why I exist in the world. And one thing I noticed myself doing was just starting to take up space in small ways. So it might look like insisting that we stop and get food, or even that we stop multiple places if they didn't have vegetarian food, which I think I became a vegetarian fairly recently. And I kind of did feel this urge to be like, oh, I shouldn't inconvenience anyone because of my vegetarianism. But I'm like, is it really that much of an inconvenience to stop twice? You know, like I need to eat and yeah. That's just how it is. So it's kind of funny. So I was like the navigator. So I would like secretly, not so secretly, like find a Subway or something I knew would have like vegetarian stuff in the Google Maps and like pretend like I was navigating somewhere, but then it would take the car to Subway, which I thought was really funny. But yeah. And then just like taking extra time in the morning for like a hot meal, taking time to arrange my gear, even if these weren't things the other person really valued or appreciated. I'm like, these are just things that make me happy. They make my day easier. I'm just going to take a little bit of extra time, even if they're already ready and kind of standing there looking at me. It's going to be fine. And then also just being okay saying no to things I wasn't interested in. There was like kind of a suggestion that we take a short hike in the woods from camp in the trees. On the CDT that we had already been on, and this part of the CDT was not, the Continental Divide Trail was not terribly exciting. And I'm like, you know, I really want you to go if you are enjoying it, but it's just not like really appealing to me. I think I'd rather just stay here and read or catch up on some work, you know, sitting in my tent in my sleeping bag. But yeah, I felt okay to say it. Rather than just like pretending like, oh, that's a wonderful idea. And then like dragging myself along. I also had a raging migraine through most of this just because we had been so short on water for the first couple of days. So I was actually in like a little bit of pain. And yeah, I think that I'm more impressed with myself, like knowing I was still able to, kind of hold it together and like really stand up for myself, but also like still be kind and see it from the other person's point of view while really kind of feeling like shit. And then the last thing that I noticed myself doing that I was like, ooh, that's really cool, was I kind of let go of the thought of he won't listen in a million years, so there's no use saying what I need. And I kind of on some level accepted that I probably wasn't going to be able to change his mind about some of the things that I really felt like I needed. I'm like, yeah, I can need this all I want. I'm probably not going to get it, especially since he's the one driving with the car. He kind of, you know, has a lot of power in that way. So I think the old me would have been like, well, I'm just going to, you know, might as well like not talk about it. And I also kind of decided it was important for myself, but also for him, for the sake of our future friendship, not to join him in just kind of ignoring my needs or discounting my needs. I felt like it was healthy for him to see me as a person with needs, and I kind of felt like it was also good role modeling. Like maybe someday he'll do a better job of, you know, seeing his own needs because he sees me acting as a person who's not afraid to like say what they want, say what they need. So yeah, I really, even though I kind of detached from the idea that I'm going to get everything I want or even some of the things I want, I never got a night in a hotel or a campground. It was all wild camping, sleeping on the ground. But yeah, I definitely was like, it's still worth saying my needs. It's still worth expressing my needs. You know, and whether or not they're met is not necessarily the point, but there's like actually a lot of power and a lot of good that can be done in saying, just merely in saying and expressing it. And so really I was kind of like playing with that idea that saying it matters, voicing it matters, voicing it is good for the relationship in the long run. And it might actually be really good role modeling for this other person. So there you go, the people-pleasing episode. I hope that was helpful for you all. I hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit about my life and some of the stories. And yeah, I just really I'm happy to be home. It feels really good to be in my bed and not on a freezing cold plateau. And my kitty is here snuggling up with me. And it was just, I was like, I think I was in like so much ecstasy to be home last night and not sleeping on the ground in the middle of nowhere with like animals walking around my tent. I was almost like up till midnight, just like so like stoked on it. Like I could not fall asleep, but then finally did. I think I'll probably sleep better tonight. But yeah, happy to be home and just really happy to kind of have taken this journey to have grown a lot. And I know that the growth isn't done. Like these things deepen, right? And these things, I think whenever, I'll kind of leave you with this, whenever you're on a vacation or just anything in your life, and it's just not going well, there's hiccups, it's not going the way that you hoped. What if you really believe that this was here for your healing? This was here for your growth. I kind of have this mantra. This one's for the medicine, which is from a song, which I'll put a link to in the show notes if I remember. It's a really good song. But yeah, I'm like, as I was sitting in the freezing cold plateau, I was like, yeah, this one's for the medicine. This is me just like learning to deepen and like kind of like really deepen my study of what I need, how I ask for it, how I show up in relationships, how I deal with give and take in relationships. And yeah, I feel like I've done a lot of work on that over the past couple of years. And there's probably, and there are definitely like some areas I feel like I've mastered. And as soon as I feel like I've mastered something, I get an invitation to go deeper, which I think was this trip. It's like, let us deepen your study of assertiveness, people pleasing, give and take in relationships. So I really think that's how life is. You never like, you learn, you practice, you get better, but you never really arrive. It's always it's a spiral process of going deeper, going to the next layer, going to something even more meaningful. And that really is just how we grow. So I'll leave you with that. And thank you so much for listening. And I will talk to you soon. Take care.